All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. So, you know, my name is Ken Harris, and it's really a challenge to come before you for a few moments just to talk about Dads Matter. And so when asked to be part of the panel, we really talk about what would what can we share that would be relevant and most beneficial. I do want to say that and with Art's presentation, you saw the iceberg, and fathers are mentioned, and they're under the iceberg. And I just want to highlight that because that has a relevance to what I would like to share with you. And then also, I put a slide in to also bring in where we are as far as geography here in Louisiana. And I had an opportunity of being here last year in Renaissance Village, working with some men and community folks there. And so I'm really here to emphasize Dads Matter. So, and that's my purpose, just to make the case for Dads Matter. I'm a project director for a Healthy Start program in New Haven, Connecticut. As Deborah said, I started in Boston, one of the original sites in 1991. And I'm also the board of directors of the National Healthy Start Association and heading up our Dads Matter work. And we've done a lot of things the last few years under Deborah's leadership, and we've developed a core adaptive model which we're implementing across the country, and that's a whole presentation by itself. And if you're interested in learning about that model, you certainly can follow with our National Healthy Start Association office with Deborah herself. I'm going to use my time just to talk about a few other things. We started with 15 sites, as Charlotte let you know. We emphasized we started in 1991, so we started with 15 sites. It grew to 105, and then we're really talking about over two decades of experience. And so what qualifies us to talk about fatherhood in a unique way, the fact that we've been doing it almost 25 years, so 2.5 decades almost, and we've learned. So all that we know about our families, our women, and our children, it's interesting because he's been there all the time. He's been invisible. So as you take in the data today, just think about the men and fathers that were part of these stories, these lives, and Kalamazoo and then all over the country in programs. So 1991, when we started, we didn't have the luxury of ignoring fathers. We're a maternal and child health organization. In our communities across the country, we did not have the luxury of ignoring the fathers because fathers were showing up in the beginning. We could not turn them away. So there are many sites that started doing great work with fathers in Baltimore, Baltimore Men's Health Services, and it grew into the great program where Joe Jones is running the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore now. Programs in Boot Hill, Missouri, the Missouri Boot Hill Men's Project is there. Boston, Healthy Start, where I was, we started the Father Friendly Initiative. And there in New Haven, we've had a fatherhood program, Male Involvement Network, for about 17 years. And so many sites, when we did not have resources to address men and fathers, we went ahead and did the work because of what you've heard here, the community-driven approach to addressing our problems. And so the community took on the initiative, the partnerships that were developed helped us advance the work. And that's why we are ahead of many of the programs in the fatherhood movement today. It's not a new shiny nickel for us. We've been at this since Healthy Start started. So increasing paternal involvement with children to promote responsible fatherhood. And promoting fatherhood, Healthy Start has been engaged with that work since the beginning. Improving the well-being of children by increasing the proportion of children growing up with involved, responsible, and committed fathers. Again, we have research that supports this. And then also stressing the importance of involving fathers in providing practical support during pregnancy, something which we have really become expert at, and that is including him in every stage of pregnancy and beyond pregnancy. One thing to keep in mind with this system of maternal and child health, just structurally, it was not designed for him. And we knew that with Healthy Start. And so just bringing him in was a challenge itself, dealing with attitudes about him just coming into a clinic. So the reality is the maternal child health system was not designed for him, and especially if you're a black man or a man of color or a low-income father. The systems that were designed for you or the system in this country, what do you think the system in this country designed for men is?
Prisons.
Prisons, exactly. And so when you talk about moving men into maternal child health, it has been a challenge, and we certainly need more resources to continue doing that work. But again, many Healthy Start sites across the country have been doing this work and have addressed some of those barriers. But structurally thinking and speaking, the system was not designed for him. So that's important to remember as we think about involving dads. So dads do matter, and they matter in these families. But what has been done with them over the 23 years, and what is going to be done with them over the next 5 years with the new Healthy Start? Men experience the system differently than women, especially when we bring them into maternal child health. And so the training that we've developed over the years is really, really important on inclusion and how to train staff and even how to receive him into the clinics, into the workshops and education offerings, because men experience the system quite differently. And it's interesting, when you think of exclusion or inclusion, you have to think about exclusion. When people have had a history of being excluded, it's a challenge to now all of a sudden include them. And if you need a lesson on that, let's just look and see what happened to slaves in this country. They have a history of being excluded, and so just turn around to include them. It didn't happen overnight. And so the same thing with men. It's a challenge to now include them. And men should not be an add-on to your services. They should be inclusion. And so we're very clear about what we intend when we talk about including men in your services, because having them as an add-on is just something special. He's part of the family. And if we in this country would really get a hold of bringing our family together and not continue to serve them in a fragmented way, we'll stop offering fragmented systems. So his and hers, he experienced it differently. And even those services that are in place for him, there's a disparity, there's an inequity there. You all get the nice fluffy towels and we just get paper towel. So laying the foundation, and there's lots of work out there and an influence of fathers in birth outcomes, and there's needs to be more for sure, but there's enough out there to really encourage us to get moving, especially when it comes to increasing birth weight and addressing low birth weight. Father involvement has been shown to make a difference. It's important to understand how we view Healthy Start, fatherhood from the national level, and then this is part of the model that we're implementing around the country, and it's certainly the model and view that we have in New Haven, YM. But men's health is, looking at men involvement, male involvement, fatherhood is about looking at men before, during, after, and beyond pregnancy. So if you can remember those four things, then you have our view of fatherhood. So before pregnancy, during, after, and beyond. And so we really look at men and being a part of this across the life course. And as you heard in the earlier presentations, again, all the work we've done around life course, we know to start with fatherhood across the life course. And there are different roles and responsibilities he has along the life course, and we've been helping programs identify ways of engaging him across the life course. And as you see, men's health is to the left because that's a common and critical thread that has to be addressed a lot across the life course. If his health is not, if he's not healthy, then he's not going to be helpful across the life course. And we're talking mental, physical, behavioral health, because these men have lots of challenges and issues. Again, if they have health issues that have been ignored for a long time, then we need to address his health across the life course. So this is how we view fatherhood. And it's on an individual level as well as a program level. So there are different things that we do with programs as well as with individuals within those programs. And it's also critical for Healthy Start because we focus on children up to the age 2, but we look beyond. And that's why we talk with men about being involved beyond pregnancy, because those early years, and it's what we call the new middle passage now, and many of you are probably familiar with the third grade prison pipeline. So having men engaged before, during, after, and beyond, that part of that work includes having conversations about preventing children from being lost in the early years. And so we have early childhood development, all of that is part of our fatherhood work. So he does matter across the life course. If he's not there, if he's there and unhealthy, then that can really begin to impact children and outcomes for children, even at grade school. So part of laying the foundation, again, looking at the impact of birth outcomes, we have more data that shows, again, partner involvement, partner support during involvement during pregnancy may reduce the likelihood of a poor birth outcome. And building on that foundation, some work that we've done in New Haven, increasing outreach and connections and services for low-income, non-custodial fathers. Out of that work, we began to see, again, and more we involved men, we were able to get a lot of the children out of the Department of Children and Corrections custody and into the homes and hands of their fathers who were able to take them instead of them being in foster care. And that's just more of that data that went along with that paper. And we also implemented work at the national level. We did a paper, a community perspective on the role of fathers during pregnancy, and a qualitative study we did with Dr. Amina Aliyah and others. Again, finding out really how does the community view fatherhood? How do women see men and their role in pregnancy and in their lives? How does the community see them? And so this paper was important for us to do from the national level just to find out what is the community saying about paternal involvement. And so the background was about defining male involvement during pregnancy, because again, coming up with a common definition, because that was missing, but to have a definition to work with. And the aim was really to define male involvement during pregnancy and obtain community-based recommendations for interventions to improve male involvement during pregnancy. And our fatherhood model, the core adaptive model, the CAM model, is based on what we've learned from this paper. And it was done with a community-based participatory frame on it. And the conclusions were, from individual, family, and community, societal and policy factors play a role in barring or diminishing the involvement of fathers during pregnancy. A recommendation, future research and intervention should be targeted to these factors and their interaction in order to increase fathers' involvement and thereby improve pregnancy outcomes. You might be familiar with Dr. Liu's paper, where's the F in MCH, which is good. I'm not a cusser, but I always want to cuss when I see it, because you get frustrated after all of these years of the fatherhood movement that still we're asking the question, where are the fathers in maternal and child health? He's been there all the time. We just chose to ignore him. The results, I thought, were really important because there's several historical developments, slavery, declining employment for black men, and increasing workforce participation for black women, and welfare policies that favored single moms led to father absence in African-American families. Today, more than two-thirds of black infants are born to unmarried mothers. Even if unmarried fathers are actively involved initially, their involvement over time declines, and we've seen that in our work across the country. And it's not something that we should ignore. So it needs to be highlighted, the historical developments in this country. And Art talks a lot about our history in 1970. And so I want to read a poem, if I could, for a moment, from that era. And raise your hand if you know where this poem comes from. Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, there are far too many of you dying. Raise your hand if you know. Father, father, you don't need to escalate. 1971, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? Dads matter because of what's going on. And as we look around, we saw earlier data, we know dads matter. Men matter. And if we don't do something soon, our community will implode. This is a picture from a formerly incarcerated artist whose gift would not have been realized had not someone in Philadelphia decided to do something to encourage men coming out of prison in Philadelphia for that community, which is known for its wonderful art. Incarceration rates in America are disgraceful. We're the prison nation. Dads matter because many of our dads have had experience with the prison system. And the reality in this country, according to a recent report from the Growing Incarceration in America, 98% of those men and women return back to community. So dads matter because they're coming back to community. And if we're not prepared for them, if we can't serve them, if we can't keep them healthy, then we know what happens on the other side, those collateral consequences. So keeping him out, the recidivism is high, so keeping our dads out of prison is tough. Keeping him with his family, keeping him with those mothers, supporting them. So we have to create opportunities for positive engagement. So things like centering pregnancy, which we're working with Sharon on centering dads at this point. Because we know from all this work that men do great in groups. So providing support groups is the first thing that folks can do. That's what they did in Renaissance Village. Provide a place where men could come and talk and support one another, and that was the beginning for lots of the work. But keeping them engaged and giving them something positive to do, keeping them out of prison or keeping them from going back, helping them out, addressing their medical conditions. In prison in this country, their medical issues are not addressed. The chronic diseases, the heart disease, the hypertension, the mental health issues are not addressed inside, and again, they're released with no services, no connection. So we have to help them out by connecting them to health services even when they get out. In addition to that, they have substance abuse problems and other challenges, no housing, instability, and so getting him into those kind of services. So there's lots to do. So dads matter because these are our Healthy Start dads. A large percentage of these men are Healthy Start dads across the country. And I encourage you to check out this report. It's not the Bible for the country as we continue to talk about mass incarceration. Dads matter because our dads are there. Here, Louisiana is known as the prison nation of the world. And look at trends here and fathers that are right here in Louisiana that are not with their families. Dads do matter. Locked up, locked in, locked out. I could have chosen a slide from any state in this country and said the same thing today. I could tell you what's happening in Connecticut. Same thing. Supermax prisons across the country where men are spending 121 days in solitary confinement, 23 hours in, 1 hour out. Dads matter. When you look at this slide, dads matter. These are Healthy Start dads. So the work that we have done over these years to not only include him, but serve him, support him, so that he can support his family, that we have healthy families. We look at them as a family. We don't fragment him. He's part of these families, and how can we assure that he is healthy and that the health family is intact? So dads matter, is all I had to say today. Dads matter in the birthing room. So there's lots of research and data that I'll talk to you about birthing room. Dads matter in the bedroom. Actually, I know that comes before the birthing room. But we'll do interconception care as well, so we can still take it back to the bedroom, change the context of pillow talk. Dads also matter in the classroom as we look at performance of our children. We look at outcomes for our little boys and little girls, self-esteem. We look at adverse childhood experiences. Dads do matter. Dads matter in the clinic room, how he is engaged in the clinic room, the kinds of opportunities that are there in the clinics. Dads do matter. Dads matter in the courtroom as well. When decisions are made about these children to go elsewhere instead of with a dad who's able to take them, we have to do something about that too. So looking at policies and laws. And in the community room, again, as we continue to address this issue of mass incarceration, we can't talk about fathers without having this conversation, especially men of color in this country. You can't help but talk about dads when it comes to mass incarceration. So it's coming, and we need to talk about that as a community. And dads matter in the family room, bringing families together, healthy relationships, co-parenting. He matters in the family room. And then hopefully when there's a good situation happen, dads matter in the baby room. So make room for daddy, is what I say. Thank you.
Me and my baby. He's 21 now, and certainly not that age, but that's the age that helps me deal with the fact that he's a grown man.
I knew that was not his son at his current age. Thank you very much. This session was entitled Evidence-Based Outcomes for the Healthy Start Program, and you have three excellent models for evidence-based programs. One on Healthy Start reducing disparities in birth outcomes, another on Healthy Start addressing and being used for community disasters, and the third that Ken just presented on Healthy Start addressing the needs of fathers and men in MCA service delivery at the community level. And I want to thank our excellent presenters this morning, and then also thank Regina Davis-Moss, who is also one of our board members and helped us to organize the session. And I want to open the floor to questions for our presenters, because we do have a few minutes for questions. Yes.
Hi, Dr. Stokes. We're talking. We get back to the hot. But dads matter. I want to talk to you, sir. Considering that Job and Family Services are using the Title 20 program to keep dads who may just come out of jail and living with the mom, to keep them home babysitting, because they won't give the woman Title 20 if the dad is there and doesn't have a job. But if he's looking for a job. He can't watch these kids. So she can't work. It's just a mess. What can we do? They're not giving them a break. It reminds me, I'm a New Orleanian, by the way. I relocated to Ohio after Katrina. And it reminds me of being here through it reminds me as a little girl running to my aunt's house and seeing her have to cover up my uncle because the woman was coming to the house to check to see if a man was there. And she would cover him up, and they said, "What was that thing?" She said, "Oh, it's my son. He was sick from school, so he's just all covered up. He's not feeling well." Because the worker, the welfare worker, was coming to see if anybody was in the house, and they would literally, I've seen this woman open my aunt's closet door to see if anybody was hiding in there. So this system is designed to keep us unempowered to do anything. So we have these men that are coming home and want to be with their family. And I work with a Healthy Start program in Ohio, and they're frustrated because they can't go out and look for a job because their wives are working, or if she's not working for money, she's working to keep the benefits she has because she has to work so many hours to even get food stamps. So we're keeping them disempowered. What in the world can we do?
Ken, I don't know if you have an answer, but one of the things that I think everybody can do is get their communities registered to vote. Mm-hmm. Because some of that you can take care of at the voters' registration booth. But Ken, do you have a response?
Yes, that was the first one, Deborah. It's just about the voting, because I think some of those policies that are in place that really present those barriers have to be addressed. And then when Art presented, he talked about community health workers or case workers being the advocate. Okay, so health advocates. And I know our male health advocates go to court, they address policies, they do a lot. So the advocate, things have changed on that level. So I would say that's one thing. We in New Haven, we have a group, one of our men under our men's consortium is called Just Us Dads, Justice Dads. It's a play on the word, but Just Us Dads, because that issue is true, right? And so what the men would do, they'll get together and they do group babysitting while each of them go out looking for jobs. And so that's the way of getting around the system. So again, you learn this from being community-based. So again, how do you work and be innovative and creative? And so their dads will keep their kids together while each of them go out looking for jobs, because some of them have that situation that you described. But Justice Dads, and what we're doing with these dads is really training them, and we're creating a curriculum now just to train them on being policy advocates. And that's the group that'll grow, and they'll mentor others and peer-to-peer mentoring and keep that training going. So as dads come in, get supported by each other, they'll become leaders of other dads, because they have to address those issues sometimes one by one as they come up. So, but the first thing is the vote, because they have to address the policies that are put out.
There's some male programs there that Urban League has one, and so there's another one run by another young man there. And they're trying. But the Just Us Dads, I don't think they're familiar with.
So I'd like
to get some information to share that with them.
Okay.
Yes, sir, you have a question?
Well, based on, first of all, a very good presentation, all of you, and I'm sorry, I'm just curious. Dads matter, I think politics matter also. It's a lesson I think we should have learned in the last couple of weeks. And I apologize for not knowing your name, sir.
Arthur James.
But between the home of Huey Long, by the way, it was very progressive. A lot of people didn't realize that back in the day. Addressing house disparities, is it possible to really address disparities by moving people up without moving other people down?
Yes.
I totally agree with doing what we can to move people up, but I also think that as long as we don't address the high end and the concentration. concentration of wealth in the hands of so few people, tremendous wealth. And we distribute that, which was the Yuen Long philosophy. I don't know how much we can really make a difference in this very issue.
So, just my bias here, first off. Where wealth inequality in this country is concerned, we have greater disparity in wealth in the United States than any other country in the world. I think there's lots of data that say to us it contributes significantly to many of the dysfunctions that we experience in our society. And I think my own personal bias again is that. We're not on a course that can be sustained for a long period of time, because the number of people that we are hurting who are below those folks who are earning huge amounts is unfortunately growing, and it's growing exponentially. But this the tenor of your question suggests that diminishing the percentage of wealth owned by the 1% is somehow going to bring them down. If they owned that 1%, a significantly smaller percentage of the overall wealth of the country that would be distributed to those below them, they would still be extremely wealthy. So I don't see us bringing them down. Where infant mortality is concerned, and that's the lens through which I look at much of the world.
But I'm in favor of bringing them down.
When you look at studies that were done looking specifically at infant mortality by class, comparing Sweden with England and Wales, across all social classes, everybody did better when everybody did better. The data is overwhelmingly out there. It's just that we have elected in this country to ignore that data and to pass rules and regulations that disproportionately favor the wealthy at the expense of those of us who are not wealthy.
You've got to remember that Huey Long advocated for putting a chicken in every pot. He didn't advocate for taking a chicken out of anybody's pot, but just adding one to everybody's pot. So he was more of an equalizer.
He also advocated for putting limits on wealth and
yeah.
how much money people can make and other kinds of things. And he's very strong in terms of redistribution
of wealth. Any other questions? Comments?
I think another piece to add to your question, though, is I think there are a lot of people who are made to believe that helping folks who are poor is going to adversely affect and influence the majority of us and not just those who are at the top. And unfortunately, those folks who are at the top have sold to the rest of us things in such a way that often we vote against what is in our best interest over and over and over again. And at some point in time, that's a piece that's going to have to change.
And you have two more questions. Have you worked with any grandfathers projects? I know you've been with fathers, but have you done much in terms of projects specifically geared at grandfathers?
Not only the men that show up, grandfathers that show up at groups.
Any other questions? Thank you for your participation and attendance. And we're ending right on time at 2:00. Thank you very much.